Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Joel W. Barrows, and he is clear over on the other side of the state, on the banks of the mighty Mississippi. He is the author of some thrillers, and he's out with his new one, Deep Red Cover. It actually came out last fall, but the book's available now on all the traditional platforms where you buy books. And Joel has a legal background that we'll probably get into a little bit. But Joel, I want to welcome you in here. And this Deep Red Cover, it kind of continues your whole thing about dealing with these fringe groups in the United States and doing it in a literary form. As you do that, these types of groups that jump out to you, what is it about the literary form of writing a novel or a thriller that makes it that much better of a way to tell that story?
Well, I've been writing about domestic terrorism for at least 10 years now and encountered fringe elements as a prosecutor for years. Before that, the freemen, the sovereign citizens, that sort of thing. But I've always had sort of a fascination with subcultures, white supremacists, the militias, eco-terrorists, motorcycle gangs, that sort of thing, how they arise, who joins them, and the threat they pose. And dealing with it in this fictional context, I think, gives you a really good vehicle through which to look at those questions. Some of the characters are normal citizens that you and I might think of as somebody who could live down the street, but somehow they get radicalized. That's one of the things that I deal with in the book. And it's just a good vehicle to do that.
The main character, Special Agent David Ward, with the ATF. Now, I thought it was interesting because I've read a lot of fiction stories over the years, of thrillers and crime fiction. Not really any of them written from the perspective of an ATF agent. Why are they sort of a forgotten member of law enforcement?
You know, I really don't know. And I worked with them a lot when I was a federal prosecutor. And they simply have done some of the best undercover work in the business, particularly infiltrating motorcycle gangs such as the Hells Angels and the Outlaws. And there have been some great books written by Jay Dobbins and William Queen, who infiltrated those organizations. I had read them, and I just got fascinated with that. And that, and given my own background, I really thought this is an underrepresented group. And I think, I think this is a good avenue for my protagonist in this case.
Are they looked at among law enforcement as an elite group? I mean, I know that I'll know people in law enforcement that go on to work for the FBI and say, wow, he's with the FBI now. Does ATF have that same prestige in law enforcement?
That's a good question. I mean, they're just not as well known. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we don't see them in fiction, right? Everybody thinks about FBI or maybe DEA, and you know, they get most of the press, they get most of the headlines, and deal with more of the cases that I think you see on the front page or hear about on the nightly news. ATF does have those kinds of cases, but a lot of times they're in the background. They're the preeminent arson investigators, for example, and I've factored that into some of my earlier books, and obviously they are the experts on all things weapons and weapons trafficking. And when you're writing about domestic terrorism, obviously that's going to be a large component of it.
You're several books into this series now, and David Ward is your character. As you've developed him over the course of these three books, how well developed was he in your mind, or has he become in your mind as you've kept writing about him? Is he doing things that surprise even you now?
I think that's true for all of us that do this. I certainly had an idea of him when I started. I'm not the kind of writer who outlines extensively. I start with the characters. I sort of see what they become and where they take me. I just find it more enjoyable to do it that way. And it's the same with David Ward. I certainly had an idea of what I wanted him to be, but as I'm in my fourth book now, I've developed things about his character that I wouldn't have imagined when I was doing the first one.
Do you have any creative writing training formally?
No, I don't, other than a couple of classes when I was at Coe College. I really don't. It's just something that I decided to try because I'd always been a fan of mysteries and thrillers, and, you know, they've given me so much pleasure over the years that I think I wanted to do it in a way kind of to just give something back and contribute to the library of work that's out there. I don't know how much of a contribution I've made, but at least I feel like I'm doing that. I actually got the idea to start writing from my wife. She had read a reference letter, of all things, that I had read for a friend of mine, and I guess I'd gotten pretty creative in describing his attributes, and she said, you should consider writing. And one day I had an idea for a book, went upstairs, and a couple of days later I had 15 pages worth of outline, and off to the races.
Well, you know, something I found interesting is I read the dialogue in your book, and a lot of times I will, just for the fun of it, read dialogue out loud to see if it makes sense, to see if it sounds like something that somebody would actually say. And I know in your job as a district judge, you probably hear dialogue that sounds fake, because I think courtroom dialogue is some of the most fake. People say some of the weirdest things. I don't recall. It's just, it sounds almost made up to me, things like that that you hear in a courtroom. So when you're writing your dialogue, you don't have the descriptions, the adverbs that a lot of books seem to fall victim to, but how do you make your dialogue sound so realistic? Because it sounds very realistic to me. It doesn't sound like I'm reading a writing.
Well, I'll tell you, Brian, that's the greatest compliment that you could possibly give me. Writing dialogue is my favorite part of the process. And ever since I was a kid, I always had an ear for the way that people talk to each other, the way they communicated, the intonation, the way that they really said things as opposed to what you might read in some fiction. It's interesting because right now I'm watching Ken Burns' work on Hemingway on PBS, and, you know, they're discussing the directness of his writing, really in obviously very complex in some ways, but very simple in others, and how straightforward it was and how devoid it was of adverbs and adjectives. And I think that's the approach to take. I try to make it sound real. After I've written the dialogue, I read it back and I think to myself, is this sound like the way two people are actually going to communicate? Does this sound like how one of these defendants is going to talk out in the street, how he's going to interact with an agent? I really enjoy that, and I think Elmore Leonard is the person that I probably drew the most from in terms of how to write dialogue, and, you know, in my mind, he was the master of that.
Oh, I'm talking with Joel W. Barrows, about his new book, Deep Red Cover. He's an Iowa author, an Iowa writer, and the books are available everywhere. You mentioned Elmore Leonard, and of course, anybody that has any ear to writing knows that he's got those, I think it's 10 rules for writing, and one of the biggest things is to cut out the part that people are going to tend to skip. I think that's one of the rules. So as you've written these books, have you gotten used to killing your darlings and cutting out things that you thought were good at one time, and they just don't really move the story?
You know, it kills me a little bit every time I do it, but yeah, you just have to do that. And my publisher in particular, they prefer a slightly shorter format, 60 to 70,000 words. And I'm finding that really works for me. It's forced me to sort of cut it back. I mean, I have an editor I use too, and he'll come back to me and say, you know, this is superfluous. You need to take this out. And I listen to them, and it makes it better every single time.
You write in your job, in your 8-to-5 job, and you also read a lot of writings, I'm sure, that people submit to you. Do you have an ear for this passive voice and for essentially bad writing? Because I know, and, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, judges read a lot of bad writing from a lot of different sources. Is it almost like nails on a chalkboard now when you read passive voice or things that come in front of you?
You know, I wouldn't say that because I'm really just focused on doing the job and keeping things moving when I'm there. And, you know, when I'm reading a brief that somebody gives me, I'm looking through there for the kernels that I need, the case law that I need, the points that I need. What I don't like in that context, Brian, is somebody who thinks that their legal brief is better because it weighs more than their opponent, and just throws everything against the wall to see if it sticks. It's just like anything else. I want to see a concise argument that's well laid out and that you can back up with authority. Obviously, as you know, it's a totally different type of writing, but I think doing this has certainly improved my legal writing, and it definitely does give me an eye for what should occur in that context, too. And I think it's helped me help the law clerks and interns that I've worked with over the years to, improve their writing as well.
Where do you get the names of your characters from? I'm always interested in that.
I'd like to say that there's some great secret to that, but a lot of times, when I first started out, I might just open the phone book and look for a surname that I liked or a first name that I liked, or I'll go into some name database and just look for a name that I think fits the context and sounds right. A lot of times I'll start to write a paragraph with a certain name and I'll think that doesn't work, and I'll go back and change it. I've done that after I've completed the book. It's the sound of it, I think, the way it flows in the writing that's probably most important to me. Certain times I try to take names that are more common in the region where I'm placing the story. But mostly it's just the sound and the flow in the course of that paragraph or whatever it is.
Well, this particular book, Deep Red Cover, set in the Ozarks, Missouri, and I know you've written Texas as locations before. So, what do you do to pick your location for your book? These places you visited?
Texas, definitely. I know Texas well. I have family there. I know Missouri well, also. And in fact, I used to practice law in Missouri. But when I'm picking where I want to set these books, it's really about what region of the country would you be most likely to see this type of thing. With the militias and Deep Red Cover, Missouri is one of the states that has a real proliferation of the militias. They're hardly alone. I mean, they're everywhere, but there is a significant presence in the Ozarks, and it just seems like a good place to set it, and it was a place that I was pretty familiar with. So that's usually what I'm looking for when I do that. It's the region where I think the story is going to occur. Like Deep White Cover involved immigrant vigilante groups that decided to enforce border control on their own. Well, obviously that has to be in Texas or Arizona or New Mexico. So that's usually why I do it.
Who's your toughest critic? Is it your wife or you?
I would say me. Yeah, it's definitely me. She's very supportive, and very seldom does she give me much criticism about my writing. Now, she knows punctuation and grammar better than I do. She's my sounding board for that. I'll ask her. She's walking by in the hall. Does this sound right? Should I have a comma here? That sort of thing. That's where she weighs in. Not so much on the story or the characters.
But, of course, she's the one that got you into this, and so she kind of owes it to you to give you that, give you the advice because, hey, you're in this too, right?
That's right.
All right. Hey, this has been fantastic. The book is Deep Red Cover. He's Joel W. Barrows. He's clear over on the other side of the state on the banks of the mighty Mississippi. Go check out all of his books. They're available in Amazon, Barnes & Noble formats all over the place. Joel, just a fantastic book here. I really enjoyed getting to read your thriller, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on, Brian. I know you've interviewed a lot of the greats in the industry, and I'm just delighted to have the opportunity to appear on your show.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast.